All right, so thanks for having me. So I'm going to tell you today about an exciting new measurement. We have measuring CMB lensing tomography out to redshift 2 with galaxies from the Unwise catalog. And so just to clarify, what exactly is Unwise? I think some of you may have heard of the Wise infrared satellite. Unwise is uses data from the Wise satellite, but it is an unofficial catalog covering all 5 years of data from WISE, whereas the official catalog only covers the first year. So it's almost a magnitude deeper than the official WISE catalog. And I'll talk a little bit more about this in a few slides, but I just wanted to clear that up at the beginning. So this is work that I've done at Berkeley with Simone Ferraro, Eddie Schlafly, and Martin White. And there are a lot of details that I'm not going to be able to get to in a 30-minute talk. So for those, I will refer you to this paper that we had out on the archive in the fall. So I'll start with just an overview. So I'll start by talking about what we can learn about cosmology from CMB lensing cross-correlations. And then I'll explain how Unwise is an ideal sample for a high singlet noise measurement of CMB lensing galaxy cross-correlation. And actually, the Unwise catalog has enabled the highest significance detection of CMB lensing cross-correlation to date, with a signal to noise of about 80. I think for comparison, some past works have gotten signal to noise of somewhere like 20, so this is a pretty big step up. And is also interesting because we've now exceeded the significance of detection of the Planck CMB lensing auto spectrum. And so this is sort of the first survey where we're, you know, beginning to get more information from CMB lensing from the cross spectrum than from the auto spectrum. And right. Because we have such a high signal to noise, we of course need to be very careful about systematics. So I will talk about a couple sort of interesting systematics. There are many, many more that you can read about in that paper, but I'll talk about two of the sort of the biggest and most interesting. And the first is measuring the redshift distribution of the Unwise galaxies, which is necessary for interpreting the measurement. And the second was controlling leakage from low L power that we found when deconvolving the galactic mask. And so I just thought that was sort of an interesting thing that came up at the few percent level that I wanted to just briefly mention. And then I'll end by talking a little bit about our work in progress, constraining cosmological parameters, and how we're going to deal with nonlinear structure information and go beyond linear bias for modeling. So I'll just start with a very brief introduction of CMB lensing. So as photons propagate from the surface of last scattering to us, they're lensed by the intervening large-scale structure. This leads to distortions in the CMB lensing map that are characteristically non-Gaussian. So they have a distinct shape from the Gaussian fluctuations in the primary CMB. And you can use that shape to write down a quadratic estimator for the lensing potential and basically pull out an estimate of the potential along line of sight out to redshift 1100. So that's what this figure is showing. It's a little hard to see, but I think you can still get the idea that this lensing signature in the center is quite different from the primary CMB. So this is great. You get a lot of information out to the redshift of the last scattering surface. But you only have one integral if you're just looking at the auto spectrum. And if you instead want to get information about the power spectrum at multiple redshifts, you're going to need to do something different. And so there you can actually cross-correlate with galaxy samples at different redshifts to get information about the evolution of the power spectrum. And so here I'm just showing a schematic picture of that. The blue is the CMB lensing kernel, which is very broad, and it sort of peaks at about redshift 2. And then I've put some, you know, very fake galaxy samples. But you can imagine, you know, if you had galaxy samples like this, you would basically be picking up information about the power spectrum at all of these different redshifts. And actually, get tomographic information from this cross-correlation. Now, of course, the complication is that once we're measuring CMB lensing galaxy cross-correlation rather than the auto spectrum, now we've brought in the galaxy bias, which if you just have the cross spectrum, it's degenerate with the amplitude of the power spectrum. So there we also need the galaxy auto spectrum, which will have two powers of galaxy bias, as opposed to only one in the cross spectrum. And in this way, we can break the degeneracy between bias and the matter power spectrum.
So do you want to include the K dependence there?
This is supposed to be like a schematic picture of how this works.
I guess my only point is that if there is K dependence, then those two biases don't have to be the same either. So.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, so this is just like a schematic picture. Yeah, you actually want to correctly model the bias, and yeah, so they won't be exactly the same. Right, yes, yeah, so with CMB lensing cross-correlations, now you have a measurement of the growth of structure as a function of redshift, and this is interesting for a number of reasons. So GR plus lambda CDM makes a prediction for how structure should grow given the cosmological parameters, and that's given by this black line here. So if you basically, if you make this measurement, you can constrain deviations from this this prediction, and that's shown by these green and purple curves. And here I'm just comparing to some current CMB lensing large-scale structure cross-correlation data from existing data sets. Another interesting parameter that you can measure is the neutrino mass. So at high redshift, the neutrinos are relativistic, but by the time you get to low redshift, they become non-relativistic, and therefore they will increase the matter density and therefore decrease the growth rate of structure. And so basically they'll suppress the low redshift amplitude, but leave the high redshift amplitude the same. So that's shown by this dotted black curve. And this suppression is about 3% for a minimal neutrino mass. So that's sort of setting the scale of how well do you want to measure the amplitude of the power spectrum at low redshift. And as you can see from this plot, the existing data, you know, is not really all that close to this this goal. So
so these blue points, that, you know, that means like boss galaxies? Is
that what I mean? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, going out to redshift TAF. Yeah.
So like, should we create a systematic difference between the blue and red points?
I think possibly yes. I don't know. I mean, this is coming from a different paper, but
these idiots.
But yeah, I think yeah, you would. I would want them to be consistent. So. Right, and then another sort of interesting motivation are these tensions between Planck measurements of sigma 8 and omega matter and the lensing measurements. Of course, going back to Neil's point, you hope that the lensing measurements are consistent with each other as well. So, but anyways, if that's under control, then you can maybe say something interesting about this tension between weak lensing given in these contours going in this direction, HSC, DES, kids, as compared to constraints from Planck. Okay, so how are we gonna do this, build a CMB lensing large-scale structure cross-correlation that can measure the amplitude at multiple redshifts at high significance? We're gonna want a large galaxy survey to suppress the shot noise in the galaxy power spectrum. And we're gonna want those galaxies to go out to towards the peak of the lensing kernel at redshift 2, so we want them to be as high redshift as possible. And it turns out that we can actually do this very well using data from the WISE infrared satellite. And so WISE has some big advantages here. So it's an all-sky satellite mission, so we immediately have data from the full sky, which is great for cross-correlating with full-sky CMB maps from Planck. And as an infrared survey, it can actually take advantage of the fact that some galaxies are brighter in the infrared than in the optical. So here I'm comparing a redshift 1 galaxy between SDSS on the left, where you can really barely see it at the center, and Wise on the right, where the galaxy is just much, much brighter. And so this really allows us to pick out galaxies going to higher redshifts, you know, even though we're limited by the fact that Wise is quite a small telescope. And finally, I just wanted to remind you of the distinction between Wise and Unwise. So Wise is the satellite, which the Wise team produced a catalog coming from 1 year of data in 2011. But Wise has taken 5 more years of data as an asteroid hunting mission for which there's no official catalog. So we instead use the unofficial catalog produced by Eddie Schlafly. And so Eddie is an expert in large surveys. He's one of the leaders in the DESI imaging surveys, which have been using some of this Unwise data. And so he has produced a catalog of sources from all 5 years of the Wise data. And this catalog is publicly available online, and it's super cool, so you should definitely play around with it if you're interested in this sort of thing. Yeah?
Why didn't Wise keep making their catalog?
I think it's because the reactivated Wise mission is an asteroid hunting mission, so they've been mainly focused on that. They had an effort to produce their own catalog, but it was taking a while, and basically, Eddie had already done similar sorts of things for crowded field photometry of the galactic plane, which maps well to Wise, which where a lot of the sources are blended together because of the large PSF. So we thought it was a good opportunity to do that. Great. So we have this great all-sky survey, sources detected in 2 infrared bands. And so how do we get galaxies? Actually, first of all, I'll start with this bullet. So we want to remove stellar contamination. This is somewhat difficult to do with just the Wise colors. So instead, we take our Unwise sources, we match them to sources in the Gaia catalog, and then we remove any source that Gaia thinks is a star, basically because Gaia is a space-based mission with very good a very stable PSF, and it can tell you quite accurately whether a source is extended or point-like. So we throw out all point sources from this cut, and we estimate that this leads to about 1% residual stellar contamination, mainly coming from sources that are fainter than the Gaia detection limit. Great, so we do that. We have a sample of galaxies. And then we apply some color cuts in our 2 Wise bands. And this allows us to identify galaxies at different redshifts. And so here, to a sort of a rough way of characterizing the Wise redshift distribution, we've taken our Wise sources, matched them to very deep photometric redshifts from the 1-square-degree cosmos field. And then we're showing that these color cuts are basically picking out galaxies at redshift half, 1, and 1.5. Moving from the blue to the red sample. So I'll talk a little bit more about the estimation of the redshift distribution of the Wise galaxies. But basically, just doing this sort of cross-match from Cosmos, it's going to suffer from the fact that Cosmos is a relatively small field. And basically, there's some uncertainties in the redshift distribution. I'll talk about them in a few slides. But essentially, this color cut will allow us to pick out these 3 samples at different redshifts. And then here are just some pretty pictures. Here's a sky distribution of the Unwise galaxies. You can see it looks fairly uniform. You don't really see any structure in galactic latitude or with the Wise scan strategy in ecliptic coordinates. And then for our CMB lensing, we're using the Planck CMB lensing reconstructions. And so here's just a plot of the reconstructed potential from Planck. And then, yeah, masking the galactic plane following Planck's masks. OK, and then, of course, we take the power spectra. And here we have, on the top, the autospectra of these 3 different samples. And on the bottom, the cross spectra, galaxy cross CMB. And I'm showing the significance of all three samples. So you can see quite high significance. The red lines here are a halo fit times linear bias model. And so basically the point here is just that, you know, this model, which is sort of a rough phenomenological model, can fit the data. This is probably not the kind of model that you're going to want to use to model the cosmology out to these relatively small scales. The other point that I want to make here is that I did not have room to jam it into these equations, but we also include a magnification bias term, which actually turns out to be sort of a couple sigma important for this highest redshift sample, which has the highest response to magnification bias. So that's another thing that, you know, once we're working these pretty high detection significances, we need to be careful to include terms like magnification bias. And then, of course, because we have these high detection significance, we also need to have tight control over our systematics. So at this point, I'm going to switch gears and tell you about a couple different systematics, which are, you know, two of the most interesting. But I think if you want more detail, I'll refer you to the paper that we had.
What is the vertical line?
The vertical line is a scale cut. So we found that the autocorrelations, if you change the galactic mask, you got some scale-dependent shift in the power spectrum at scales of L less than 300. And so we are, at least at this point, we've excluded them from the fit. I think, actually, this line is a little bit old. I think we now may understand what was going on with that. And so now I think we could probably push this line down to L of 100. But basically, this is everything to the left of the line we're a little bit worried about contamination from as a function of galactic latitude. Right, so the largest systematic that we need to understand the unwise galaxies is understanding their redshift distributions. So we have a whole bunch of galaxies. We just have two bands in which those galaxies are detected. So photometric redshifts are impossible. And if we wanted to get more bands of optical imaging, that would lead to a much smaller sky fraction to get deep enough optical imaging. So earlier I showed you some sort of redshift distributions from matching to the Cosmos catalog. And so this is good for sort of a first step of, you know, we have three different samples at redshift half, one, and 1.5. But it suffers from some problems. So Cosmos is a 1 square degree field of view. So there'll be cosmic variance in our redshift distributions from Cosmos. And if there is variation in the redshift distribution on the sky, we won't, you know, we're just getting a redshift distribution at one spot at relatively low Y's depth of coverage. So if you have some variation with Y's depth of coverage, you're not going to pick that up. And then, of course, there are photometric redshift errors, which become larger at higher redshift. And then there's the problem of blending in that we're trying to match the unwise galaxies, which are all have, you know, wise has a PSF of about 5 arcseconds. So each, you know, many of these wise sources are blended, which means it's going to be difficult to map the unwise galaxies back to these optical Cosmos sources. So that's another thing that could mess up this sort of cross-match redshift. So instead, we measure the redshift distribution by cross-correlating with spectroscopic surveys from SDSS. So over on the left here, I'm showing these approximate redshift distributions for our WISE samples and the colored histograms compared to the spectroscopic samples that we use, which cover, you know, out to redshift 3 or 3.5. Basically, BOSS galaxies, eBOSS quasars, BOSS quasars. And so the idea here is that if you take your photometric sample with unknown redshift distribution and cross-correlate it with spectroscopic sample in a narrow bin, the amplitude of that cross-correlation is proportional to the biases of the two samples and the redshift distribution of the photometric sample at, you know, sort of at the center of that bin, you know, the limit that this bin is very narrow. So split up your spectroscopic sample into a number of small bins, as sort of shown in the histogram, cross-correlate with each of them, measure the amplitude, and then that gives you your redshift distribution. And so that is what I'm showing here. And I should also note, this is, you know, also going to give you the bias evolution of the galaxies. It's the product of the bias evolution and the redshift distribution of the photometric galaxies. And fortunately for us,
That's good for you, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because wherever we have galaxy kernel, we also have the bias evolution. So this is actually great. We don't have to worry about deconvolving the bias evolution. Right. So yeah, to make this measurement, you know, we do this these cross correlations with these narrow spectroscopic bins. We subtract some estimate of magnification, which will correlate, which could correlate bins that are separate, well separated in redshift. And then we divide by the spectroscopic bias for each of these samples, combine them together where we have multiple samples, mainly at low redshift, and then that produces this measurement of B of Z times DNDZ.
So the sigma 8 of Z evolution factors out here?
Yes. So I think for now this is at fixed cosmology, but yes, if you have a different growth factor, but I think, you know, we know the cosmology well enough that that should lead to a relatively small shift in this, in the redshift distributions. But that's certainly something that we're planning to check.
Get to the cosmology eventually, right? So
yeah, yeah. So this is just getting the redshift distribution, and then we're going to use this to model the CMB lensing cross correlations and autocorrelations. So does that make sense?
Because the worry is that if you have a different cosmology, you may get a different redshift distribution, and that would be the generate your cosmology.
Yeah, right. This has to assume some cosmology, sigma 8 as a function of redshift. But I think that our uncertainty on the cosmology is small compared to the shifts in these redshift distributions that would matter. But anyway, this was all done at fixed cosmology. We plan to check that, you know. Actually, wait.
Just ask. So, what dominates the error bar here? Is the short? This is short noise of the spectroscopic survey factor in a lot here.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that what it
means? Yeah, the shot noise in. Yeah, the impact of the shot noise on measuring the cross correlation in each of these bins.
So that's the dominant error here.
Yes. And so then, you know, I'm showing a best fit curve in blue, and then these gray curves are basically redshift distributions representative of our uncertainty on the redshift distribution coming from these error bars. And so then, of course, what we care about is what is the impact of this uncertainty in the redshift distribution on our auto spectra and cross spectra. And so here, what I'm doing is I'm plotting. So I've taken each of those gray curves, and I've used them to produce auto spectra and cross spectra. And then I divide the resulting spectra by the spectrum that you get using the fiducial redshift distribution. And so you can see that this leads to variations of 5% or so in the amplitude of the auto spectrum. And the sort of relevant thing to compare here is this amplitude of the redshift uncertainty in the auto spectrum to the error bars on the cross spectrum. And you can see that they are sort of about comparable, which suggests that this is going to be a limiting uncertainty in this sort of measurement. Since the DNDZ is leading to this like 5% variation in the auto spectrum.
Wait, sorry, where does the 5% come from? These curves look like they're like 20%.
Well, yeah, maybe, okay. I think that they're sort of more down here. Yeah, maybe. Oh, actually, no, I think you're right. I think it is about 10% here, but in terms of if you take each DNDZ and fit a different bias to it, so at fixed cosmology, fit a bias to your fiducial DNDZ, fit a bias to these samples from DNDZ, that error on the bias is about 5%. So
the bottom one looks like 5%, the variation in the cross spectra. I guess in auto spectra, maybe it should be twice that.
Yeah. But this is also a little bit misleading because each, you know, so this is at fixed bias. Each redshift distribution is going to basically move you up and down uniformly. So you can take out some of that by, you know, basically going to, you're going to change your bias. And then, of course, you know, this one is bias squared.
So. It's bias times dn by dz, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you don't, there's no point in separating the two from each other because if you measure that product, and then that's the only thing that matters for your.
Right. So what we do is, so we get bias times DNDZ from the spectroscopic cross correlation.
Autocorrelation is bias squared times
DNDZ. Bias squared times DNDZ squared, and then we allow the amplitude of that to float. So, yeah.
I think I'm missing, you know, why, as Niyash said, you know, like I'm missing why, you know, why this scatter is so much bigger in the auto spectrum than in the cross spectra, you know, why is it not just an idea of two?
I think because the auto spectrum is going to be more sensitive to like, these sorts of bumps at the edge.
Hmm. Oh, like there's redshift ranges you're saying that fall outside of like the CMB lens and kernel. Is that what you mean?
Okay, so what I did is I basically took these DNDZs and these sort of, these gray DNDZs have all these, have some bumps out here where
right.
You have larger error bars. And if I took out those bumps, the error bars on the auto shrink a lot, the cross is less affected.
But does that cause those bumps? Have a low lensing efficiency for the CMB source redshift?
I think it may be because you're changing the redshift distribution at lower redshifts where there's low efficiency, because this, the efficiency is still kind of high here at,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, and then there's just one other, interesting systematic effect that we also found. We wanted to test how well we can deconvolve the mask. So we're always going to be measuring the power spectrum of the cut sky. And then we can basically, following the master method, you can deconvolve the mode coupling matrix for the mask, which you can compute essentially from the power spectrum of the mask. And so here I'm just showing the mode coupling matrix for one of these wise samples. And you know, we've taken our data, we've binned it into relatively broad band powers. There's not a huge amount of crosstalk between the different band powers, but there is some. And so basically we want to test this process to make sure that we really can recover our correct power spectrum. So we make some mock Gaussian realizations of the galaxy and CMB lensing fields. And then we mask them, measure the pseudo CL, deconvolve the mask, and compare to the input power spectrum. And so things look pretty good for the cross spectrum. However, for the autocorrelation, we have this leads to several percent discrepancies at relatively low L. And it turns out that this is sensitive to exactly what power spectrum you put in for the cross. So here, to produce this curve, I'm using this measured autocorrelation, which has some extra power at low L coming from contamination or variation with Wise depth. If instead I were to use this blue curve, which does not have this upturn at low L, I would get something that lies within this error band. So basically, I would correctly recover the power spectrum. And note, of course, that these scales here, L of a couple hundred, are quite a bit bigger than the scale on which this contamination is happening. So this suggests the solution, which is to just mask out these low L's in our lowest band power bin. And when we do that, we find that we can have much better recovery of the autocorrelation in our bins of interest given by this red curve.
The excess in the measured is unrelated to mode coupling, right? It's a systematic thing.
Is unrelated to what?
To mode coupling.
Yes, I think systematics from.
Are you saying it just like approximately cancels the transfer function that's already in? Because
of the coupling, or? So this excess is really only present at like L less than 40 or something. And this deviation is at considerably higher angular scales. So it seems like there's some like leakage.
You said you remove L less than something?
So we before we mask, we filter out L less than 20 from that from our map, and then measure the pseudo CL and deconvolve the mask. Okay, and then I just wanted to did a whole bunch of other systematics checks. This is sort of a summary of a number of the different ones that we did, so I'm not going to have time to talk about these, but I just wanted to leave this up as sort of an example of the kinds of comparisons that we were making, and basically finding that they didn't have a huge impact on our results in either the cross-correlation or the autocorrelation. Okay, great, so with last...
So the effect of bias was 2.
Yes.
These are like really low masses, right?
No, these are, so this is sampled about redshift 1. So I think, the masses are relatively high. It's not, the bias that we get here it's essentially consistent with what you would expect for a simple HOD given the number density of the Wise galaxies for this sample.
And it's the light, right? Not counts. Is that right?
It's the
map of the Wise light.
No, it's a map of counts.
It's a map of counts.
Yeah, it's galaxy counts. Yep, so we're currently working on constraining cosmology. So we made a mock data set to test our pipeline and the impact of nonlinearities and uncertain redshift distribution. I just wanted to show, if we use a linear bias times halo fit model, which has often been used in the past, at relatively low L max, this can recover the input cosmology for this analysis on mock data. So that's given by the intersection of these two lines. Once you shift to higher L's, your result is biased by a couple of sigma. I think this is not very surprising. In fact, has been seen in other papers working with mock data. But it motivates that we're going to need a better biasing model if we want to try to model as much of our measurement as we can. And so for this, we're going to be using a Lagrangian perturbation theory plus Lagrangian biasing model from this paper by Modi, White, and Vla. And so basically, this has some Lagrangian perturbation theory terms, some Lagrangian biasing, and then a couple parameters, this alpha cross and S cross motivated by EFT. And here I'm just showing the relative amplitudes of these parameters for some set, some galaxies. So B1 and B2 may be a little bit different. But anyway, the point is that we may not need all of these extra parameters, like this BS squared seems to be quite small. But anyway, this is where we're going in terms of modeling the nonlinear biasing of the unwise galaxies. Okay, and so I'll just leave up these conclusions, and I guess I can take a couple questions. Or not.
So how, given those constraints that you showed on the previous page, does this help at all with resolving the sigma tension or no?
So we haven't done cosmology constraints on our sample. We want to make sure that we understand the...
But does the size of the error bars, are they relevant?
We think that they should be, but that will depend a little bit on how well we can, how impacted we are by this redshift uncertainty. So I don't want to say definitively yes, because we need to make sure that we can not be biased by our uncertainty of the redshift distribution in the cosmology constraints. And so that's why we're testing on mocks right now. Yeah.
The spectroscopic samples you use to calibrate the NMZ are very inhomogeneous in the sense that they're patches of different surveys. But I guess, does that drop out of the final measurement? The fact that you're gluing quasars onto CMAS galaxies.
So you mean inhomogeneous in the sense that they cover different areas on the sky?
No, I just meant the NMZ is not smooth if you put them all together, put it that way.
Right. So for all of those measurements, if you divide out the spectroscopic bias, you have an estimate of the combination of bias and redshift distribution in that redshift bin. So yeah, you can kind of splice between these different surveys.
You need to know the bias of each sample.
Yes.
They're different as well.
Yes.
Okay, let's thank Alex again.